Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you guys have questions for John, text him in right now to 710-710. We'll get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good. We're good. I forgot that there's Thursday night football tonight, John. It was
really?
I forgot all about
just
it.
Just because it's NFC East and two teams with losing records?
Yeah. It just, you know, I'm not in the groove yet of, scheduling around Thursdays, Mondays, Sunday night, during the day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I love it.
That's part of it, though.
I'll watch this. But, yeah, that's probably part of it. But one thing, yesterday we were talking about it and reading reports, Saquon Barkley's not going to play. And you said, well, that makes sense. It's a quick turnaround. Now I just saw a headline on the screen that said he will play tonight.
Oh, great.
how about that?
Yeah.
Does that make you more excited to watch?
No.
All right.
Well, did you see how he played in week one? He was pretty average.
Yeah, he wasn't great.
And the Giants' offense looked bad.
That too. Were they not really expected to be much this year though?
You know,
anyway,
honestly,
right?
I had to do a Washington Post story, and my position was that say what you want about the Chicago Bears last year, they were 8-8, they made the playoffs. I didn't think there was seven playoff teams in the NFC, and so an 8-8 team like Chicago made it. All right, so I'm looking at it this year and seeing there's even more of a drop-off because even though New Orleans got off to the great start with a 38-3 victory over Green Bay, they start the season down 10 starters from last year, and then in the opening game, their center, Eric McCoy, gets hurt. He's going to miss this week. Marcus Davenport, I think, is going to miss. I mean, they're missing so many players, and you see this around the league. In Philadelphia, I don't think, even though they beat a bad Atlanta team, I don't think they're going to be good. So I think what you're looking at is that I kind of projected maybe they could be a surprise team getting to 7 or 8 wins and maybe sneaking in there, because obviously I think Dallas is going to be the division winner, and we'll see where Washington goes. But where Washington's going to be problematic is the fact that they finished first place, and they have to go up against first place schedules and play Seattle. They have to play Buffalo. I think they have to play Pittsburgh, and so it's like that's going to work against them. So in the end, I kind of gave a little bit of a nod to the Giants, and I know that Dave Wyman and I talked about this last year. Their defensive line is actually pretty good. And so they're okay, not with their front seven, but on the defensive line, and that can be encouraging. And they've got two good cornerbacks, but ultimately they're not a very good team.
I'm trying to remember, what was Saquon? Did he have a
ACL? It was an ACL, yeah.
Man, I don't know if you saw him working out, John, but his legs are tree trunks, man. That's the one thing about him.
He doesn't miss leg day.
He does not skip leg day. And so it looks like he's one of the great dynamic players I love to watch. In the NFL, they got to get him back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see if he does play tonight. But in fact, the inactive should be out here pretty much right now. So we'll know if he's going to be on the field or not. Sounds like he might be, which, of course, it's not like he's going to get 20 snaps or he's not going to get all the full playing time. But at least he'll get a chance to get out there and make some runs and get those tree trunks going.
Hey, two teams that just – and I think you have to throw Tennessee not as extreme, but – the Green Bay loss. I mean, those are two losses right there by good quality teams. I mean, what were the Titans last year? 11-5.
11-5. Yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously the Packers. Is there any talk about the preseason? Because as far as not playing guys or not being ready or whatever is.
Oh yeah, in fact, it was funny because last night I was actually going through it because I. I kept track of the missed starts. That's why I knew there was 522 players that didn't play in week one, 565 in week two, and 591. But what I also did is I broke it down per team, and a lot of the teams that didn't play their starters ended up having bad first weeks. I mean, now again, I say that even though the Rams got off to a great start and they led the league with 112 guys that didn't play in the preseason. But, yeah. I mean, Tennessee scratched a lot of theirs. Atlanta scratched a lot of theirs. And, of course, Atlanta's not a very good team. Green Bay, they kept all their starters out. So a lot of the teams that, kept starters out didn't do well. I mean, Raiders, kept some out. They were able to pull out the victory. But, yeah, I think there was definitely an effect. And, you know, also, and that's where the problem becomes, and, we'll, you know, it'll level out in about 3 weeks. But, you know, let's say, for example, you're a starter, and you've been a starter, right? You haven't played a preseason game. I mean, you've had the practice, but you've not played a preseason game. It's 90 degrees. It's humid. I mean, can you go out there and play 65 plays and be a totally effective? And I think there's a question mark about that. And certainly, you know, the debate in Green Bay, was that because they didn't do well in Jacksonville? Because obviously Jacksonville, where they played, was going to be a little bit warm because it's Florida. It's September. An advantage there, but don't you get the feeling that you know, that did catch up to them?
Yeah, you know what? I remember we opened in Philly in 89, and oh my gosh, it was hot there. And, you know, again, first game, and even if you play in the preseason, you know, you're only out there for a couple of series and things like that. And then Collinsworth was talking about that in the Tampa-Dallas game as well. Yeah. I just feel like no matter what, you know, and that, you know, that could be, I think you're right, that could be part of the explanation. The other thing is, found out with Tennessee that, you know, Taylor Lewan, he didn't play because he was coming off ACL. And then you had a couple of guys on the COVID list, right? So that's where, you know, and you had Cuisenberry playing the other side. So, yeah, I feel like they can't help but get better in this game, the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I mean, they'll get better on offense, but now the question mark's going to be on defense because, you know, with, you know, new cornerbacks and, you know, two changes on the defensive line, because I know Dennis Autry, you know, is at the one defensive end, and, you know, they didn't get much out of Bud Dupree, which, of course, now for the second straight year, you know, they make big spending for pass rushers and don't get the results. And that obviously plays into it. And the fact that, you know, last year they paid $22.5 million for Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Beasley and didn't even get a single sack. And both guys didn't even finish the season. I mean, Beasley gets cut. Clowney goes on injured reserve.
Hey, John, did you know much about Trevor Moad? You know much about him? Russell's mental conditioning coach.
I don't know much about him.
Yeah, he passed away from cancer
this
week.
Oh.
And Russell was talking about him. We were looking at some of the clips. He was obviously very emotional, called him his best friend. And apparently he went and lived with him for like a month after they lost the Super Bowl. And he was like his mental guru, if you will. And
That's just sad.
Yeah, really sad. And you certainly, in watching the video of Russell talking about it, he's very emotional. And just wondering if you knew much about him and what kind of impact you think that may have on Russell.
Oh, it'll have an impact because, again, it's like one thing we know about Russ, and, you know, this is not a negative comment about Mark Rogers, but, you know, once Russell takes you under his wing and, you know, he's so loyal. Like, for example, one of the reasons he stayed with Mark Rogers is after his father died and, you know, Mark did help get him to Wisconsin to play football and baseball. I mean, it's almost like Mark was his father. And so you can probably see that, you know, this guy was going to be, you know, almost a definite family, and to lose somebody in family is heartbreaking.
Hey, Michael Gervais, do you know him, John? Isn't that Pete's guy?
Yeah.
I think he's Pete's, like, mental guru or whatever.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a couple of conversations with him, and so I was kind of getting those two mixed up. But how many other teams do you think have, you know, they're your quarterback and your – I mean, that's, I guess, a big deal. My mental coach or psychological coach or whatever was Chuck Knox, and he would say, if you don't start playing better, you're going to stand on the sidelines with me. That's
what I used to get.
But I do you know how many? It's probably not something you have a database.
No, I don't have that. That's not in the database. But again, I think more than you would expect, because again, I mean, you can see particularly in the last 8 to 10 years, you know, with particularly now that you got the CBA, the new CBA, and the players don't have to come in until like the you know, third week of April to at least go for the OTAs. I mean, you need to work with people on your own. And so, like, quarterbacks will have their quarterback coaches. I mean, obviously, you know that Jake Heaps works with Russ and, you know, others. And I'm sure that there's mental coaches and things of that nature. But I think there's more of it because, again, you know, players basically, to get ready for OTAs and training camp and everything else, you know, they need as much support as they possibly can. And that's why I think that, you know, I wouldn't say all the quarterbacks, but I think a good portion of the quarterbacks do that. You know, some of the running backs and all that stuff. But yeah, I think there's more than we expect.
Did you see that the Las Vegas Raiders signed another now former Seahawk, Jordan Simmons?
Yeah.
It seemed like a guy that Pete really liked, yet he just, his issue was more about availability.
Well, I mean, they needed to do something, and Denzel Good, one of their guards, blew out his ACL. He became the 20th ACL tear so far since the start of the offseason. And, you know, so they needed somebody, and I guess, you know, in the case of this, they looked at it, and you know, not that Tom Cable knows Jordan Simmons, but he says, I think that guy can probably work because, you know, he's a big body and all that stuff. So yeah, he goes there and to replace, not to immediately replace Denzel Good, but at least a challenge to replace Denzel Good.
Hey John, this there's a report that it's unlikely that Deshaun Watson's criminal probe will end before the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the weirdest story, or is maybe the dice game down in Florida last year even more weird? The whole thing with DeAndre Baker and of course our guy.
Here, yeah, I would not. Yeah,
you know, I'm blanking on his name right now.
Quentin Dunbar.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. But yeah. No,
I remember the other guy's name.
I know the guy that didn't play for the Seahawks.
Didn't play for the Seahawks.
No. But no,
but that was a weird one, John.
To me, it was weirder. I mean, because again, I mean, you know, the questions, there's so many elements to it. It's like, okay, I mean, did they really go in with a gun and, you know, threaten to take $65,000? Was this all a scam by the people who were playing dice that they were trying to get the, you know, money out of these the two players and all that stuff? I mean, to me, that was one of the weirdest ones I've seen. In the case of, you know, Deshaun Watson, I mean, you know, it's 22 women claiming sexual abuse. And so it's like, you know, that's more explainable. And so it's like, and of course, I mean, everybody knew nothing was going to be done because he doesn't even get deposed until February 22nd of next year. He's not going to be in court until May of next year. Nothing changes in this case. And the fact that they're not trying to settle, because I don't know how you try to settle 22 lawsuits, and they haven't even tried to do that. It looks like he's just going to have to sit and wait. And, of course, the Texans being stupid as they are, I mean, they you know, they still are holding out for three number ones and two number twos, where they could have had three number ones and three third round picks.
I can't, if that's true, that's just mind-boggling that they didn't take that. That's insanity. But
does it show you how bad the Texans are run?
Oh, well, yeah. It would make sense considering the organization.
Yeah, although now all of a sudden where you start to wonder, the Texans go and they blow out Jacksonville. Does Jacksonville take the nod as now being the worst team? I mean, I know they only won one game last year, but with Urban Meyer as the head coach and, you know, him looking completely lost and him not going to USC because, you know, he's not going to get a $10 million, $9 million contract out of that school. It's like, you know, it looks pretty bad.
Is it? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say Draymond Jones, I guess, was he's a Bronco player that played at Ohio State, and he was saying that Urban Myers needs to entirely change his way of thinking and coaching and all that. Did you see that?
Well, I mean, I tell you the story. I think, did I tell you the Tom Coughlin story?
Which one?
I'm not
okay.
sure.
Well,
just tell it again.
Okay,
John.
So
we'll pretend it's
yeah,
new.
Yeah, this is new. It's kind of like the Drew Brees contract, but it's like, but you know,
Kyler Murray's playing baseball.
Yeah, obviously, Tom Coughlin had more of a college background when he was coaching in Jacksonville, and obviously, he did a great job, but he was so demanding on the players, and he had so many rules. Now, obviously, we know the one rule: if the meeting starts at 8, you better be there 5 before 8, or you're going to be fined. And so, what ends up happening is that, you know, he's at the Giants and they're struggling. And so during one of the off seasons, he was fixed up to talk to John Wooden, you know, the former UCLA coach. And John said to him, "Tom, I'm telling you this right now. You have to adjust the way that you coach because, one, you have too many rules.
Yes.
You need to cut it down to like 5 rules. You're not coaching teenagers. You're coaching adults." And one of the things that most college coaches do, particularly Urban Meyer and Tom Coughlin, is that they overwork you. and they overwork you to a point where, you know, either the players start to turn on you or you start to get too tired in the second half of the season. So all of a sudden, you know, Tom gets the word. He cuts things down as far as all the rules and different things like that, and they end up, even though they're wild card teams, going to two Super Bowls.
Yeah, you know, I have a Tom Coughlin story. By the way, he would make his players sit with their hands in their lap, folded during, and they couldn't wear jewelry.
Yeah, yeah.
But I passed him in the tunnel after a game, in a preseason game, and he had on a really ugly pair of pants, and I said to him, there's not a jacket that goes with those pants, is there? And he gave me a really dirty look, and his assistants that were walking behind him were laughing. But it was my last year in the league, so I was kind of a smart ass.
Well, what I liked is that, you know, for like the scouts and the assistant coaches and that, he banned them from wearing sunglasses in sunny days and banned them from wearing hats.
What was the purpose for that?
I mean, too many rules.
Yeah.
Control.
Well, they also, remember, I don't know, it wasn't too long ago that he changed all the clocks in the facility. He's a piece of work. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can take the discipline thing too far. I mean, just be the absolute opposite of Pete. And it's not that, and you can speak to this, John. I feel like everybody thinks, like, especially Colin Cowherd, maybe because he gets information from Mark Rogers, but everybody thinks that it's all loosey goosey and that Pete just lets everybody do whatever they want. I mean, I think he's somewhat old school. You have to have the same rules for everybody, and I feel like Pete always gets labeled as this guy that's letting guys just run wild, but He's a little more old school than people think.
Well, I mean, again, you see how the practices are. I mean, he works them hard. I mean, he's not trying to kill him or anything else. And they certainly spend a lot of time on drills. I mean, it's where we stand is that, I mean, basically, if you get there at the beginning, you're going to see like about an hour mostly of defensive line drills, because that's right in front of where we're allowed to be. And so it's like you see that, and then, unfortunately, they had the offense on the other side of the field where we couldn't see them, and we weren't, obviously allowed to go circle like we have in past years because of the pandemic. But, overall, I mean, there's a discipline to what he does, and, he gets the most out of his players in practice without killing them. I mean, the fact that, they came out of the preseason as one of the few teams in football that didn't have a single player on the injury list. Or not on the injury list, but a single player that was going to be missing the game because of the injuries. But they were in great shape.
John, is Eric Bieniemy going to take that USC job? I know he said he doesn't want to talk about anything but the Chiefs, but his name is prominent now. What do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that he wants an NFL job, and he should get an NFL job. I was disappointed that he didn't get one last year. Because remember, it's like the simple thing for him as far as being a head coach. I mean, he was offered the Colorado job, and he went to Colorado, but he turned it down. So I would have to think that I don't think he wants to leave a Super Bowl team, particularly two. It's like do you want to leave maybe the best team in football with maybe one of the great quarterbacks and do it just to go into college? Because, I mean, let's put it this way. If you go to three straight Super Bowls and you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, don't you think you're going to get a head coaching job?
Yeah. I have to say also that they say there's more pressure in the NFL. I mean, obviously there's probably more money involved and things like that. But the one thing, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, the thing that would just chase me away from college is recruiting.
Right.
That would be brutal. I mean, here, especially for him, coaching in a Super Bowl winning, or a Super Bowl team and, winning the AFC and all that. And then, now you got to go kiss the rear end of some 18-year-old kid who thinks that he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean, that's got to be the one thing that
I think there's many things right now, because not only do you have to recruit them, but you have to keep recruiting them even though you have them, because if they're not happy, they go in the transfer portal and you could lose them. And certainly, if you get two quarterbacks in 1 year and one isn't starting, then that guy's going to be going to the transfer portal. And so you're constantly shaking up your roster and shaping up, who's the starters and who's this and who's that. That's a big problem. And then, now you have the advent of the fact that the players are going to be, getting sponsorships, and some of them are going to get big money and all that stuff. I mean, I think it's really tough.
John, I'll leave you with a question I know you've been waiting for from the 253. Professor, when will we hear from the commissioner on reinstating Josh Gordon?
Mike, you know, there's always that Friday news dump. I mean, when, you know, Friday, he'll take some guys and, you know, make decisions on them and do it. So I would have to think Friday. So hopefully that'll be tomorrow that they can do that. And all of a sudden, we'll see if he comes back to this team.
John, I guess we're not talking tomorrow because of an early Mariners game. So you'll be doing your show on Saturday?
Yeah, it'll be from 8 to 10:30. And the reason it'll be 10:30 taking your phone calls is because Washington State pregame starts at 10:30.
All right. We're going to hear Jess McIntyre.
There you go.
There you go. And we'll talk to you on Monday then, John.
Yes.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Okay.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, we opened the show talking about what a big day for baseball it is here in Seattle. And Mariners President of Business Operations, Katie Griggs, will join us next to talk all about the All-Star Game. That's next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Well, we talked about it to open the show. A big, big day for baseball in the city of Seattle as the Major League Baseball All-Star Game will be happening right here at T-Mobile Park in 2023. And here to talk about it with us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline is Mariners President of Business Operations, Katie Griggs. Katie, how are you?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
We're great. It's huge news, big news, and I would imagine you're over the moon about it. And, you know, this is such a huge undertaking, if you will, an All-Star game and all the planning and everything. But how long had this been in the works? Is this something you'd been lobbying for years, months? Take us behind the scenes and how this went down.
No, you're exactly right. We are over the moon. This is an exciting moment for our organization, and it has been something that's been in the works for quite some time. In fact, work began back in 2018, relying on a very wide range of officials, ranging from the public sector to the private sector, and ultimately we had the privilege of bringing a bid to Major League Baseball back in 2019. So it's been something that's really been in the works for a long time, and we can't wait to bring it to fruition.
Katie, what are some of the things as far as experiences for the fans that they can expect outside of, you know, the game and the home run derby, which are awesome in themselves? We were talking about how the All-Star game is for baseball is by far the best just because it's the most authentic and, you know, other sports not as good. But what are some of the other festivities outside of that?
No, I agree with you. I think one of the things that Major League Baseball and the All-Star Week does incredibly well is represent the passion that our fans have for the sport of baseball, both inside the stadium but also in events throughout the city. So to your point, yes, there are the big moments, the home run derby and the game itself that our fans know and love, but there also are a range of events across the city targeting all sorts of different folks to allow us to really share our love of baseball but also share our love of the Pacific Northwest and Seattle. So one of the items we're most excited about is Play Ball Park, which is most likely going to be taking place across the street over at Lumen Field. It's a week-long interactive fan experience, and it welcomed over 100,000 guests when we last hosted in 2001, and we're really looking forward to absolutely crushing that number in 2023 and having the opportunity to engage with as many members of the community as we possibly can.
So it feels like there's a lot of time. It's a little over 2 years away, so you feel like, okay, we got plenty of time, but I would imagine it's behind the scenes. It's kind of crunch time, right? And just in terms of getting all these, the event you just talked about, and getting everything set up. What takes place between now and then?
No, you're right. I mean, this is when the hard work begins. So we're really excited now that the event is known and public to get to work. There is a host committee in place with leaders across the public and private sectors, all of whom are working to ensure that this event is a success. Because as you can imagine, there are a ton of details behind the scenes to make sure that this goes off without a hitch. Inside our organization, this is the fun part. This is where we get to talk to our fans, work with Major League Baseball, and ensure that we're able to create an event, not just inside T-Mobile Park, but throughout the week, that really represents them and represents the pride and what makes Seattle unique.
Hey, Katie, you spent the last 4 years working for Atlanta United in the MLS. And so how's your experience there helping you in your current role?
You know, I think one of the things we did really well at Atlanta United is something that, frankly, we emulated from the Seattle Sounders, which really is a maniacal focus on our fans. And that's something that we're very much bringing to bear, particularly as we look to the opportunity that the 2023 All-Star Week provides. I also had the opportunity to host a Major League All-Star, a Major League Soccer All-Star game when I was in Atlanta. So I have some insight from there in terms of some of the things that really worked well, some of the things that perhaps didn't work as well, and look forward to figuring out where, when, and how do those apply to this event here in Seattle.
Now, Katie, did you pipe that noise in, the train in the background? That's one of my favorite things. One of my favorite things about the ballpark.
I did. It was just for you.
I think they stuck her office out there next to the tracks. Let's have a little respect here. A little respect for Katie.
I know. It turns out it's my audio interference. It keeps me awake.
Well, how is the transition gone for you? I mean, this is a new role for you, and just being in baseball in general. We're talking about your experience in MLS, and now you're working with Major League Baseball, and this is a new role for you with the Mariners. What's that transition been like?
It's been fantastic. I mean, truly, it's an amazing group of men and women here who are absolutely passionate about the sport of baseball and passionate about the city of Seattle. So for my family and I, it really has been a tremendous opportunity to really see what an amazing ballpark we have here at T-Mobile, learn what are our fans doing today, what are we doing as an organization today, and really pushing the envelope looking forward in terms of how do we continue to get better. So it's been really exciting. I've had a tremendous amount of support from throughout the community, and we're really, really excited to get started on this process and make the 2023 All-Star Week is yet another tailwind at our back.
You know, we always talk about it's a great date to go, you know, to a baseball game because it's just a beautiful ballpark and you got such good food. My favorite being the bacon-wrapped hot dog. Bob likes the grasshoppers.
No, Bob doesn't.
Or is it crickets?
I don't like either.
But, you know, that's a huge part of it. And, you know, just the experience there at the ballpark. I think, you know, fans that are coming here for the All-Star game from around the country are, I think, going to see one of the best ballparks anywhere in the country.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. The food's fantastic. The beer selection's nothing to shake a stick at. And I think one of the things that's been a lot of fun for me is taking advantage of anonymity to really actually have watched a lot of our different games from different vantage points. Sometimes I'll be out in the bleachers. Sometimes I'll be on the 300, the 200, the 100, and really trying to understand what is it like watching a game from the various parts of our park and what are the fans saying. And it's been really fun. And I will say one thing that's really stood out to me is, to your point, it's a beautiful setting, but there's also not a bad seat in the house. So yeah, we're looking forward to showing that to the world.
Yeah. When you just back to when you're, I guess, putting your bid in for this event, how does that go? I mean, is it you talking to Rob Manfred and selling him on, hey, look at our park and look at this is our capacity and this is what our, you know, our access to the building's like and this is where it's set? I mean, is it just basically a sales pitch about why T-Mobile's great, why the stadium's great and it would make a great spot? Or how does that go?
Sure. That's part of it, but only part of it. I think the relationships matter, the support throughout the community and demonstrating this is something that's not just a Mariners initiative. This is something that people throughout the city of Seattle are excited about and are supportive about. And, you know, we talked a bit about all of the events that accompany All-Star Week. It's not just the events at T-Mobile Park. And so showing how can we actually accommodate all of these events? Where can we accommodate them? You know, I think Commissioner Manfred mentioned today at the press conference how one of the aspects they really enjoy about Seattle is the footprint and the fact that we can have a sort of very condensed area where fans can go and get to experience all of these different elements. So it is something, when they're looking at it, it's not just about those games and not just about the ballpark, though those are necessary. It really is highlighting the entire city, what we bring to bear, and how we're going to be able to welcome all of the guests that travel in from various parts of the world to experience the event.
Katie, who's your favorite Mariner?
You know, I can't answer that question. All of them are my favorite Mariners.
Well, I mean, they're such a easy ball club to fall in love with. I mean, all the guys, you get a chance to visit with the guys, and if so, yeah, it just seems like they're just such a good, tight group for kind of a young group of guys.
No, and I think that's it, right? It's the idea of getting to work around a young team, a passionate team, a team that really is on the rise. It's a lot of fun. And we're really excited to continue to tell their stories and highlight their personalities to our fans who don't get to be with them behind the scenes the same way that we do.
Yep. Katie, before we let you go, would you say dealing with Kevin Martinez is the best part of your new job or the worst part?
Oh, obviously, that's the best.
Apparently, Bob and Kevin are friends.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I love Kevin. Yeah. I love Kevin. He's my guy. Katie, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Congratulations on this. We can't wait. It was you know, thinking way back to the first time, it was amazing, and I can't even begin to think of how awesome this is going to be in 23. So congrats on that and all of the work you guys did behind the scenes to make this happen.
Thanks so much, and we look forward to seeing you all there.
Thank you.
There you go. There's Katie Griggs, the Mariners president of business operations. In case you missed the news, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game will be taking place here in Seattle in 2023. Cannot wait for that. All right, coming up, we are going to get into, by the way, I should remind you, Mike Salk is back in the mornings, Dave. I don't know if you're aware of this, but each weekday from 6 to 10 a.m., including the Pete Carroll Show, each Monday at 9:30 a.m. How about that? Coming up, how are the Titans sizing up this Seahawks team? We're going to hear from them when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
I thought it'd be interesting to hear the other team's perspective on the Seahawks, and the Titans had a lot of press conferences today. So Taylor Lewan was talking. He had a clip where he used Mike Vrabel's favorite word, which is bleeped out, so we're not going to play that one. But he also gets into here explaining why he played so poorly in week one.
Yeah, I think I put too much in the game. I got too excited. I got a little overexcited before the game, and when the game came, I felt drained, and legs felt heavy and had more anxiety. I was more worried about messing up than I was being better, or helping the team. And, you know, I think I was trying to compensate in a certain couple of ways for my knee, and, you know, I've been a long time in this league and have had a lot of success. And through those things, like year two with Whitney Mercilus having a similar game, it's something that I have to overcome and work through. And I plan on doing those things. So, you know, it's not easy, the tough 24 hours, but you got to get over it and move on and hopefully play better next week.
It's a very common occurrence amongst fighters I've spoken to, Dave, and that is an adrenaline dump where they're in phenomenal condition, training camp, everything's been great. They're on point, weight, all of that. So anxious and so hyped up before the fight, and they get into the cage or get into the ring, and all of a sudden it's like, man, my legs feel like they weigh 800 pounds. I don't have any energy, and I'm exhausted. But you're in shape. It's a massive adrenaline dump, and it sounds like that's what happened with him.
Yeah, it's hard to gauge, like, how fired up you should get, and, you know, especially for the first game, you don't really know. Look, he's coming off an ACL that was 11 months ago, so... And the guy has been a Pro Bowler in the past, and he was a first-round draft choice. So, yeah, I watched that, like I said, the very, very first play. Chandler Jones whoops him on an inside move and tackles Derrick Henry for a 3-yard loss. I would love to see that on Sunday at Lumen Field. And if it's Daryl Taylor or Rasheem Green, whatever, that would be nice. But yeah, I feel for him. I mean, and once you – and that's a terrible feeling, like being – you know, drain, you know, going into a fight, going out on the football field.
You ever have that happen?
Yeah, I lost almost everything. This is the story I always tell in Philadelphia, that I didn't pee until the next Tuesday because I was so dehydrated, and we played Sunday. It's a terrible feeling. And I used to get, I had one game where I got really tired, and I'm like, I never want to feel like that again. What is the saying? Fatigue makes cowards of us all.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a bad feeling. So, I mean, this guy's a good player, and I know it's been kind of a laughing stock. I think he gave up, what, Mike, three of the five sacks?
According to Lefko, the resident Titans expert, he's got him credited with two.
Well, no, this is looking at the Titans beat writers who charted all the snacks and snaps. And
but I'll tell you what, I mean,
we don't know them. We know you.
Yeah, we're going to hold you responsible. Okay. The tackle for a loss was just as good as a sack, and especially on Derrick Henry. That's pretty big deal for their offense. Not a good way to start off.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, yeah, if you thought the Titans offense would be a challenge, how about Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen says, you know what, this Seahawks offense, this is not going to be fun. It's going to be a massive challenge for the Titans defense.
Russell's done it at a high level for a really long time, right? He had a great week last week. I think close to 80% throwing the ball. Again, played a lot of football, has seen it all from anything we're going to throw at him defensively. I think the biggest thing for us, man, we got to continue to find ways to affect the quarterback, and we got to continue to find ways to stay tight, right? And it's that fine line, being able to complement each other and do those things. But it's going to be a big challenge for us, especially with those guys they got on the perimeter as well. But looking forward to the opportunity to get back out there and kind of see where it goes.
We get used to having, you know, our guys, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and just kind of take them for granted. You're another team coming in here. You're looking at these guys. I mean, we try not to be too much of homers, but you got a top three, four, five at least quarterback. Mm-hmm. How many extra meeting guys? DK Metcalf?
I would say Tyler Russell should be an extra meeting guy, because he's, if not, he's going to kick your butt. He does it every week, man. So, well, yeah, Russell, DK, Tyler. I don't know. Is Carson an extra meeting guy?
A lot
of meetings.
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, you got Dwayne Brown. You got a really solid offensive line. So, I mean, you got to – it's just interesting to get that that perspective. But the other thing that occurs to you is, even when you're playing – we've talked about this many times – a bad team that's, you know, 2-10 or whatever, there's always talent, and there's always a threat, and there's always a huge challenge in the NFL. And this is, you know, for these guys going up against – they have six new players on defense. So that's going to be – and also, you know, they're coming off a year – their third down percentage of what they gave up was last in the league. It was 52%, and they only got 17 or 19 sacks last year. So this is it's going to be an uphill battle for their defense.
Sweeping the dial.
Okay, this isn't Titans or Seahawks related. It's just very funny. Oregon head coach Mario Cristobal is on with Doug Gottlieb today, and he gets very annoyed when Doug Gottlieb won't stop asking him about the USC job.
When people mention your name for said job, what would your response be?
My response is, go Ducks.
Any chance that you at least have a conversation about it?
I'm telling you again, go Ducks. I'm not sure why you brought me on this interview. I was talking about the Oregon Ducks and whatnot. Since we go this route, I'll reinforce it again. Go Ducks. And so here I am, buddy.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe they've got a relationship. Maybe they don't. I don't know. I get both of their perspective on that one. I'm not a huge Gottlieb guy, but I get you've got to ask that question. And I could understand Cristobal saying, go Ducks. That's my response. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, that's not a guy you want to make mad, I guess, as far as coaches go. He was an offensive tackle at Miami back in the day. He's 50 years old, but yeah, I don't. Do you think they have some kind of a
relationship? It was playful. I don't really know, but I don't think it was an out of line question, and he didn't really give an answer to the first one, so it sounded like there was some lightness to. Well, hang on. I mean, would you even, whatever the follow up was, you know, would you have a conversation trying just to get him to give it some sort of answer other than go Ducks? I get it.
Maybe I'm naive, but is the USC job really that big of a deal? I mean, you know, you've Urban Meyer talking about it, people asking him if they thought maybe he, Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah.
Now,
it's a highfalutin
guy, I mean,
spot, man.
Apparently. I wonder what it pays. It just, it seems like, you know, this, and again, going from, we talked about this with Clayton, the recruiting part is over the top.
Yeah.
I would have a really hard time with that.
All right, there you go. Coming up, when is the next celebration dance coming from the Seahawks receivers? Well, Freddie Swain may be able to shed a little light on that. We'll ask him about it. He joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.